friends, we do our best to make it both easy and personalized and important to you as an individual when you contribute to Cross Vegas. We have brought you rentable prayer bots. We have brought you cyber sects. And today we'd like to announce an even more personal, wearable version of support for our ministry.
That's right. Straight from our CruciFit branded apparel, we have our patriotic American t-shirts. They are made from 100% poplin plain weave cotton, coming to you in all sizes, extra large, extra, extra large, triple X, and youth.
When you buy one of our t-shirts and you wear it, you will be an ordained minister of the Patriotic American Prosperity Church and Amalgamated Enterprises of the Greater Southwest, LLC, with all the rights and privileges inherent in that ordination.
And the whipped cream and cherry on top of it all is that when you wear your Patriotic American t-shirt, you get free admission into the Cross Vegas property on Sunday mornings.
Check out all the details on our Twitter account at Thirst Trap of Living Water.
Flow Bigliani, along with my partner, Telly T.J. Vangeli, this is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, T.J. and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. After all, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
This segment's brought to you by Gethsemane Sleep. Are you struggling to find that deep sleep that overcame the disciples in the presence of Jesus? Then look no further than Gethsemane Sleep. This all-natural sleep formula includes melatonin leaf, chamomile root, lavender essence, and off-market Burundian Xanax to give you that peaceful sleep when you need it most. Sleep so deep, even the Lord's direct commands and pleadings can't wake you. Gethsemane Sleep. You can find it where you buy drugs.
Well, hello there, dear listeners across the fruited plains. As you know, I'm speaking to you straight from the Big Easy, Las Vegas, with my partner, T.J. Televangeli. T.J., how you doing this fine day?
I am doing wonderfully. I cannot wait to get into today. We go to some magical places today.
Oh, amen to that. I got to tell you, I am in rare form today, T.J. I am in rare form. I mean, we are going to get into maybe some of the most weighty stuff we've ever discussed on this podcast. And we're kind of getting into what really makes Las Vegas, Las Vegas. I mean, what makes it the Sin City after all? Because on the surface, as you know, it's just hotels and games. Just a bigger adult-style Chuck E. Cheese or one of them Dave and Bumsters kind of places. So you just look at it like philosophically, spiritually, there's just nothing inherently wrong with Las Vegas. It's games, it's hotels, it's dancing, it's animals. All things you can find in Scripture. Let's just establish that right off the bat. So what makes it all go sideways? I mean, ask yourself that, listener. And the obvious conclusion that you come to is magic. I mean, magic shows are clear and away the number one attraction in Vegas. They cast a spell on people. that causes them to do sinful things. Everyone knows that. No one comes to Las Vegas looking to sin. After you go to one of these magic shows, then all hell breaks loose. You know, before the magic show, you want to go have a game night. After the magic show, you're looking to bet all your money, gamble it all away. Before the magic show, you want to go dance. After the magic show, you want to dance with no clothes on. Before the magic show, you're going to put money down on the Patriots winning, safe bet. After the magic show, the Patriots end up losing and the Dolphins win and you got no money. So it's quite easy to just trace it all back to magic.
And you trace from magic straight into demons, straight into Satanism. I think there's a clear line right through there. And these magical magicians are really on our turf too, not just entertainment wise, but spiritual wise. We've been discerning some spirits at work in these card trickeries, in these illusophiles, in these magic men and magic women and their magical man and women and assistants.
Well, that's so true. I mean, you just look at some of these magicians right on the surface and you can tell it's satanic. And I would like to encourage the listeners right now, do a simple Google image search on a magician named Doug Henning. If you never heard of him, you do that Google image search and what you're going to find is a 1970s Satan. I mean, the hair on this guy, the smile, the stuff he's doing, it is straight from the pit of hell. And somehow or another, this guy, now he was not an American, he was Canadian. Somehow or another, he even found himself in politics. So needless to say, for us to have a successful ministry in Las Vegas, we got to take on these magicians head on.
That's right, Rudy. And we decided one day, how are we going to assemble these rivals of ours? And, you know, the inspiration came straight from Scripture. Straight from when the prophet Elijah challenged all them hundreds of prophets of Baal to a little who can light a bull on fire challenge. And we decided, let's do the same thing. Let's get these guys out. You know, a lot of them offer free samples of their magic, their illusionary, their card trickery. And we said, every single clown, every single illusionist, every single close-up magic card player, let's get everyone that offers a free sample to assemble together. And we invited these prophets of Baal to assemble at the roof of the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory, which is the source of caramel, of milk and honey flowing out together, as near as we can tell, in any place in Las Vegas. This is the most caramel-like place. Certainly got the largest inventory of caramel at any place we could find, so it sounded like the perfect place to get these Baal-worshipping magical prophets to challenge us. They didn't know about each other. All they were trying to do was arrange future gigs, but we thought, let's see if we can get 400 or 500 of these guys, every clown in town, to come on down.
And, you know, you might think, oh, they ain't going to come and do something like that. But let me tell you, we set the stage just right. We said, oh, yeah, we'd like you to do a little bit of your show up here on the roof of the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory. And they said, oh, now that's something I might be interested in. Of course, they were interested in. And, I mean, we set our sights high. We searched high and low. And, you know, the magic scene in Vegas is kind of like Noah's Ark. You got two of everything. I mean, there's illusionists, there's card tricksters, there's clowns, there's animal clown magicians, there's animal illusion card trick magicians, all types. And just to name a few, because I know there was a lot, but we invited a gentleman by the name of Matt Franco. You might know him from winning the 9th season of America's Got Talent. Okay, so we're talking about some real brass up in here. We got Shin Lim, who's famous for some real up-close card tricks. Another man by the name of Alan Ackerman. You may have heard of him before, too. So this is some of the elite, but also just some of the run-of-the-mill type of magicians.
You know, once they assembled on that roof overlooking town, at that point, they all were kind of looking at each other like, uh-oh, something's gone wrong here. Every single competitor of mine is in the same place. But we read out to them in the loudest voice we could, passage from 1 Kings, where we were saying, you sons of the devil, you've come here to meet your match. And we read out the challenge about setting the altar with the bulls on fire. Whoever's God could call down fire from heaven was going to win the day. And then I kind of explained that a little bit, though. It's not really fire from heaven. We're going to see if we could do a little magical competition with each other, see whose God showed up. So first off, that sent most of the people packing. They said, I see that I will not be evaluated on my skills and chosen for a future gig. We probably had about 9/10 of the magicians kind of wander off at that point with real disappointed looks on their face. But a couple of them stayed. I know you faced off with one or two. I faced off with a couple. And these gentlemen were in it to win it.
That's right. They were in it to win it. And the thing is, I've been around some of the magic scene in my past, so I knew that, you know, if you give them a challenge, they'll be on that right away. So, and just as a side note, I just want listeners to know I did try a little magic in my growing up years before I really knew that it was all satanic. But honestly, I tried some lessons and I probably should have made the check out to garbage because that's where my money went anyway. And I kind of realized I dodged a bullet, but what it did give me was that opportunity to know what they're thinking and how they sort of approach their craft. And so we faced off, at least I tried to. A couple of them that came late hadn't quite heard TJ's challenge, his ultimate challenge, and so they started doing some card tricks like they were auditioning or something, and then I had to kind of take them aside and explain to them that it actually was a challenge. But, you know, they did some of their card tricks, and I thought, what's the spiritual challenge I can do to one of them card tricks, you know? So when they're asking the audience to name a card and then they magically pull it out of their pants or whatever. Well, what I did was what I call the old Reverend Tilton sword drill, where you ask someone what's bothering them, and then I just randomly open up the Bible and I relate that text to their current situation. And there's no stopping that one. I don't care how many up-close card tricks you can do. That one works every time because it's not satanic. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah, and my guy, I know that one of the fellows who was interested, of course, in future business, but thought, you know, maybe the challenge is yet the way to get a $170 gig out of this, was this fellow by the name of Dr. Doinkscap the Clown. And I gotta tell you, Rudy, he was dressed, clowns aren't known for their couture, but he was dressed like a complete hobosexual. Frills on his sleeve cuffs, rainbow colored pants, polka dot suspenders, way too much makeup. You know, you just know he's the type of guy who's gonna be hollering out at kids from below a sewer grate 20 minutes after he punches the clock.
Oh, that's for sure. When I saw him coming up, I thought, when he goes to the barber, he probably asked for a number two because his hair looks like crap.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there, Rudy, except it didn't look like he'd been to the barber much, except for a cut and color. An orange was the color he apparently chose, and the cut was the grow it basically out of your sideburns or your ears as far as you can. But Any road, he acted like he'd emptied probably a dozen EpiPens into his cornflakes this morning, because he just started doing all sorts of things. He's pulling out fake flowers from his sleeves. He's getting some, I don't know where they're coming from, some rabbits and some parakeets and pigeons from all over the place. I just started to think, man, this guy's into dark stuff. If he's pulling animals out of nowhere, I mean, you gotta be into some genetic engineering or something. But I thought, I'm gonna show these guys how the Lord intended animals to reproduce. Not just straight out of your sleeves, but, you know, you put two of a kind together. We're talking about Noah's Ark earlier. That is animal husbandry 101. You need a male, you need a female. Though I guess the effect of it wasn't as sudden, or the timing. You know, comedy's all timing, they say, and I'm yet to pick up on that too much. But I let a couple of chinchillas mate right in the middle of that Rocky Mountain chocolate factory. I didn't really plan on the fact that there's kind of a gestation period before you get an additional third chinchilla, but I think everyone saw what was going on. We were contrasting from the culture. We were in a war with the magical culture.
You know, sometimes a war has an immediate impact and results, and other times it just, you know, we just gotta say, hey, there's magic going on right here between these two chinchillas, but you just gonna have to wait and see what happens in the end there. But I think what it proved was is that clown magician really didn't have any magic.
No.
And you're the one that had the power. But you know what you call a magician with who lost his magic? You just call him Ian. Sorry about that. But that's a good one, right?
Yeah, that's a good one, Rudy.
I was going to say maybe that he was going to do a thing where he'd said he's going to, I thought he was going to say that you brought a bear up there and do a little joke like, just like he was doing with his animal jokes, and say, what do you call a bear with no teeth? And then you do kind of like an abracadabra, and then you say, it's a gummy bear.
Oh,
but anyway.
I love that. Yeah, you're right. I think Dr. Doink's cap was not maybe as spiritually empowered by the devil as we would have liked. All shoes, no balloons, I like to say. But, you know, just to make our point, though, I did try to break his funny bone by really melting him with some of that spray water, you know, out of the blowflower that makes water when you come up close to you. You say, "Here, smell this," and then you spray somebody with water out of that. Well, I'm grasping at the bulb right in my pants, trying to get that thing to spray. And it just doesn't, it's just not working. There's some kind of blockage. So I just keep grasping into my pants. And Dr. Doink's cap just sort of starts shaking his head. You know, only a clown can give you that weird look where they're really, really disappointed, but they've still got the smile on their face. And it's kind of like a sad, happy paradox. You know, but I didn't mention this earlier, but I was actually dressed as a clown. I came dressed as a rodeo clown. You know, I used to be, you didn't know me in this time, Rudy, but back at Whosoever Will, I was part of a little puppetry and clowns for Christ troupe. And I went by the name of Tuckles Van Jelly at that point. And when I was Tuckles, I selected the rodeo clown as my persona, you know, like a real man's clown. Right, that's what I went for then. So I kind of came to this Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory all rodeo clowned up. You know, I heard, even doing some jokes, I heard a good one too. Rodeo clowns, they just bleed on the inside. Oh, that got me, yeah, because they're always getting knocked around by bulls.
Oh, man.
So at a certain point, to really try to break this guy's funny bone, I started doing one of my juggling tricks I've been practicing last couple of weeks. You know what I'm juggling, though? I'm juggling crosses. That I've been practicing that for a couple weeks. And just to take it to another level, I started juggling flaming crosses. And at that point, Dr. Doink's cap just gave up. He just looked real, real sad-like and said, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how in the year 2021 you think you can burn crosses. And I didn't really hear him much because I was concentrated on not burning myself. I did have to drop all the crosses on the ground and kind of stomp on them a little bit to put them out. That was a little bit frightening for everyone involved. But he realized he'd been summoned to a duel he couldn't leave. And so he just, you know, the Stephen King fever dream sticks out his hand. And you know what he does? He electrocutes me right at the last minute there, like with some kind of buzzer thing in his hand. I should have seen that one coming. I thought for like 2 seconds it was a spiritual attack, and then I realized, oh, that's just one of those old tricks.
Yeah, you know, out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of them old tricks he was trying to do on you, because I thought, oh, I mean, TJ's got this thing wrapped up. And then you was stomping out the crosses, and he rolls up on you with that little electrocution trick, and then I started to smell some more smoke. And then I was turning around whipping around the other way. Unbeknownst to me, there was a teenager who was, I was about to use this teenager for to be my assistant for a bit of an illusion, a spiritual illusion I was going to throw at them. Well, my original assistant was Jolene, but she had to cancel unexpectedly. So I was able to hire this one teenager that I found on Craigslist. And then he picked up one of them crosses. And at the same time, one of the magicians had brought a cotton candy machine. And somehow he had run into that cotton candy machine. It was as if that cotton candy was made out of dynamite. Because what a turbulent, chaotic event unfolded after that. And well, let me just suffice to say that when caramel gets kind of burnt, it makes kind of like a creme brulee. And I think the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory is more of a creme brulee factory.
You know, it's funny you brought up Jolene. She was supposed to be in my clown posse, just the same. Although I guess the costume I got for her was more nose than anything else. But I expected her too, and I just didn't. I stopped getting replies from her a couple days before the event. She did help us put it on, seemingly a little reluctantly, but she did do some reaching out to some of these magicians for us.
A lot of magicians said they kept asking, "Where's Jolene? Where's Jolene?" She said she'd meet me here, and I was like, "Well, it's us, you know. what are you looking for the assistant?"
She's gonna meet you here. It was kind of confusing. It was like they weren't using like the second or third person correctly. It was kind of like, well, meet you and meet us here. Jolene's supposed to get you to meet us here. Why is she telling you to meet her? I don't understand that.
But anyway, so she was gonna be yours. I think maybe. You know, I mean, she's very generous and everything, but I was under the impression that she was going to be in a tuxedo, being an assistant for, well, kind of one of them tuxedos that's still feminine, and to do the illusioning. But I suppose she can multitask.
Yeah, you can wear a swimsuit tuxedo and a red nose at the same time, I suppose. But you know, she was supposed to help me with the pet fancier permit. I was supposed to have more animals with me, but you know, talk about Las Vegas city government. You know, it's $25 to get a permit for a cat as a pet fancier, but then just, I didn't understand this at all. There's like spiders are free, but wolves are considered wild animals, but fish and birds are not. It was kind of a confusing situation there, but well, one of the things I did get was a chinchilla. I had to pay $25 for the permit. One of those chinchillas grabbed one of my other tricks. which was kind of like one of those out-of-my-sleeve sparkler things, starts running around with that, gets it lit on fire by that whole candy creme brulee fire explosion problem you were describing, and starts lighting drapery up. So I know that you were paying attention to how the first catastrophe was unfolding, but there were animals helping to burn that place down that you didn't even see.
I had no idea. Now, what is the status on the chinchilla at this point in time?
Mr. Chinny has gone to meet his maker. Though in hindsight, as I'm reflecting on it, we had told the prophets of Baal that we were going to be burning up an altar with a sacrificial animal on it. And I think Mr. Chinny, the chinchilla, and the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory kind of combined to be that sacrifice and that altar, if you know what I mean. It feels like the Lord validated our unintentional but explicitly stated purposes.
Yep, we had our plans and he had his plans. And isn't that something, you know, back in the Old Testament years, they burnt up a bowl. Even when they poured water all over it, still he burnt up. And then here in 2021, we challenge the new prophets of Baal and sacrifice a chinchilla. Isn't that just poetic?
It is. And which one of us is coming away with some demonic coulrophobia? I think it's these other clowns, not us. I'm not afraid of them. We proved it. We proved the Lord's blessing all day long today.
Oh yeah. Now those magicians are going to be looking to us and thinking, oh man, I don't know if I want to mess with them. They're like that. It's like they're kryptonite from Superman.
Some holy crypto.
Weakness says you go away one day to satisfy. Weakness says you go away one day to satisfy.
Listeners, just as well as Rudy and I do, that we are living in some unusual times where the federal government is making some decisions, such as certifying some uncertifiable elections, not to mention other terrible, terrible relief bills and child tax credit debt-ridden bills. One of the things they've been doing that's really getting us during this time is saying that states like Nevada, which has decided to continue daylight savings time, even though other states and the federal government have not, they want to impose a non-daylight savings time paradigm of time on the entire country. But Rudy, you and I know that there's something special about daylight savings time, in spite of all the people who die every year because they get into car wrecks because they didn't sleep enough the last night before. But there's something that makes all of that worth it. Isn't that right?
That's right. And there's some deep roots from daylight savings time in our country. And I think it would behoove us to pay attention to them. Many of you might know that daylight savings is something that, you know, has been kind of brought into the country. And I'm okay with that kind of thing sometimes because there's a lot of good things that have been brought into America that we've sort of perfected, like pizza, for example. It was first proposed by a man named George Hudson in the 1890s, and he was a New Zealandican. And then one of the first cities to enact daylight savings was in Ontario. I believe the city was called Port Arthur, Ontario. And I don't know what those French people are up to, but that was back in 1908. And, you know, we've come a long way since then, haven't we, TJ?
Yeah, in some ways, and in some ways not. Case in point, I had a meeting with Councilman Crayer scheduled for 11 a.m. MST and not MDT, and I show up and he is not there. His secretary says, "Your meeting was an hour ago." And I said, no, ma'am. I am on daylight savings time. You cannot unsave my daylight from me. And I said, why are you dead timing me with these hours that are different, and you're refusing to follow what the state's legislature has passed as an infringement of states' rights? Why are we bowing? Why are we kowtow bowing to this federal mandate to change the time from a saved time to a standard time?
When it comes to daylight savings, I say once saved, always saved. You know what I mean? I think we really need to honor some of the efforts of those that have established this in our country. There was a daylight saving coalition led by an Idahoan senator named Mike Crapo. And pardon my language, that is his real name. And any man whose last name is Crapo, who's able to get into any government, is worth their weight in gold. He must be good, right? Imagine the kind of fights that he had to endure with that kind of name. Anyway, his whole reasoning was that more French fries are sold during daylight savings time. And what's more American than French fries? You know, we're not talking about, you know, more crepes sold or, I don't know, more red wine sold. We're talking about French fries. And so if it's good for the potato farmers and it's good for the economy and it's good for Wendy's and Burger King and McDonald's, I mean, even if you don't understand the religious connection, just understand it from a Americana perspective.
That's so true, brother. And I just love what you said about French fries. I mean, think about, like, all these different events that we have, like, where these special American foods are sold and made, like the Polish sausage. I love to get me a Polish sausage. And man, that makes me feel like a real American.
Oh yeah, and this idea that, you know, God has given us time and we ought to be able to use it as we see fit. And we're looking to save time. We're in the business of saving, are we, TJ? And so for those that are trying to tell us that our daylight can somehow lose its salvation, well, let me tell you something. You're going to have to run through the likes of us to be able to put forth an agenda like that.
You know, and speaking of saving, you know what else needs to be saved, Rudy? It is the dollars in your pocket. Now, listener, I know that you love money. I know that you want your money to be saved, and that it's a respectable, prudent thing to do to save that money, but Rudy and I would like to participate in the salvation of your money. We'd like you to send us some for safekeeping and for the blessing that only comes from giving that money into the hands of some people who just will not bow to any corporate governance structure, to any board, to any oversight, any accounting whatsoever. You need that money saved. You need that money freed. Am I right, Rudy?
That's absolutely right. And just in the same way that we save daylight in order to make plants grow, we want to save your money in order to make it grow as well. And it's going to grow for us, and it's going to grow back to you in blessing on top of blessing.
Well, folks, it's another edition of Holy Ghosted. What do I do with my unanswered prayers? It's one of the key matters as you mature in your faith. What do you do when you pray something and you really believed your faith was genuine, but you did not get what you prayed for? So specifically, we've been looking around on the socials. You know, some people have posted their prayers there, and some people tweet back at you like, I tweet prayed for you, I Insta prayed for you, or whatever the case may be. And one of these prayers that we've come across, someone was saying they've been given a vision that the world was going to end on a specific date, and then it doesn't. And what are they supposed to do now? Rudy, what do you have to say to this dear social media user with whom we are not yet formally connected?
I want to give credit to this person because they were quite vulnerable in order to share this request that had gone unanswered. And this was brought, well, it wasn't necessarily brought to us, but we found it on the Twitter account at QAnon and on and on. And basically, this person was very, very upset that they thought the world was going to end at a certain time. They've been praying towards that, and lo and behold, they wake up and the world is still going. And to add insult to injury, Trump is still not president, as they say, but we know he's still spiritually president. And I think my response to someone like that is that there might be something that the Lord is needing you to do in that time that he's given you. You know, we've been given time. We don't necessarily know how many days we've been given, but my advice to that person is, what could you do in this time to ensure your heavenly dwellings in the sweet by and by? And I would say, you know, is there some money that perhaps that you have been holding back that you could be giving over to someone? And so that would be my first thought, is just, in what ways can I ensure my heavenly dwellings by being faithful and generous, extremely generous to those that have helped me? And that's something that is very near and dear to our hearts. And so that's something that we definitely connected to. And that's some way that I actually replied to that tweet.
That seemed like an excellent piece of advice to give. And, you know, two things came to my mind for this dear believer. One was, well, is there anything you can do to participate in precipitating the end of the world? I think that's always a legitimate question. You know, do you have any way to bring about Armageddon more quickly? Do you have any influence with the international powers? Can you make them increasingly belligerent against each other and not into this whole one world government thing? I think that's a legitimate course of action right there.
Oh, totally. And I think maybe that's the answer, is that person didn't do their part, didn't do their share in bringing the end of the world.
You know, the second piece of advice, though, is how do you keep faithfully trusting the next prophetic dream that you had and after this one didn't work out, you know? So one way to do that would be to cultivate some prophetic dreams. We've talked about vitamin JC suppositories right before bed. That might be one way to go. Or, you know, you could binge on History Channel Nostradamus shows or Swamp People Python Hunters is a series. I know those have brought on some visions for me that I'd rather not remember. And then, you know, there's vaccines. We've been talking about that already. That's the real trick, right, Rudy? Is the real challenge to faithfulness comes from being able to incorporate reality back into your beliefs in a creative way.
Absolutely. And there's so many great ideas that you just mentioned there. I mean, for me personally, now the vaccines have been helping me to have some of these visions, but my go-to in the past was to take an expired NyQuil and read a Frank Peretti graphic novel, and that did the trick for me. And so, And if listeners out there, if you have any tricks that you know about ways to have a more of a vision and dream, just go ahead and send us a tweet, and you can hashtag that into the world.
All right, another listener, or I should say potential listener. We don't actually see from the Twitter handles which ones have liked or followed or listened to us per se, but let's just say a potential listener wrote out, "Why have my prayers for Trump's immigration policy come undone under the Biden administration?" I think that's very legitimate. I felt something similar to that. And, you know, I'm concerned, just like this prayer is, when he said his prayer, I'm concerned that people coming across the border would find a way to stop my $1 cartons of strawberries. You know, I don't think they got the kind of patriotism as, you know, whoever's working those fields right now, making those $1 cartons of strawberries possible. And so I did have one thought on this, though, which is you're partly answering the prayer because you still got kids getting locked up. So your prayer didn't go fully unanswered. You know how there was Cyrus who helped the Israelites kind of without wanting to per se, but God used him that way. Then Trump was certainly a Cyrus. And maybe Biden's another Cyrus? Like, more than one person could be God's unwitting stooge, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think that throne of unwitting stooge reminds me of the throne of David. Some people are under the impression that David was going to be king all the way up into the Messiah, but his throne was still there. And in the same way, we have the throne of Cyrus that's going to potentially keep going on, and we can see evidence that even though the man in the throne, in that Cyrus throne, is different, the results are still the same. Kids are still getting locked up. And for that, we can go to bed at night. We can put our head to our pillow. And then when our knees hit the floor the next morning, we can thank the Lord that we do get those $1 strawberries and that they are being picked by American hands and not the hands of those that are looking to get every benefit and raise the minimum wage to $25 and all this other nonsense.
You know, I've been thinking about this border matter because there's a way we stand to benefit, and Rudy and I have been exploring this a little bit, and here we're going to get a little away from this particular prayer, but it dovetailed so nicely with something we're actually working on. I thought this is the best place to bring it up, which is, you know, the border wall reminds one of Nehemiah and Ezra rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem after the exile. And we do know that Trump's wall mostly came about. There's still some bits that didn't, and then there's, you know, some bits that did, and then some bits that did that then proved pretty susceptible to hacksaws. But we thought, what about buying up some of that wall? We talk a lot about monuments, talk a lot about statues. I think this is an amazing stone of remembrance that we might be able to go down and actually pick up pretty cheap. We could get one of these border wall sections or a couple of them, bring them across Vegas, set them up right in Cross Vegas somehow or another as a constant reminder of the work left to be done, you know, an unfinished product. There's some symbolism there. And then also maybe we kind of put them like dividers between the VIP section. Like how about this? Whoever's bought the most cyber sects gets the border wall sections, dividing out their section from the rest. And we want to have some kind of constant reminder every time you go to church of child separation. I think that people should never again be able to go into an evangelical church and not have that blessed reminder.
That's right. That is a blessed reminder. And it's kind of like the way that, you know, there was a day when the Christian flag was in every church across America. I don't know where them Christian flags have gone to, which actually, as a side note, we do need to think about an art project incorporating the Christian flag. But I think from now on, what we're trying to do, because we are trendsetters, influencers, is we want to see every church have a piece of that bona fide wall in their building as a reminder. And, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about Cross Vegas are monuments and artist renderings of passages or of wonders of the world, but we want the real wall as a reminder. The bona fide real wall, not some artist rendering, something that you can push down like a picket fence. I mean the real thing. That's really going to set it apart in Cross Vegas, and I think once you see it in its majesty and see it in its usage of being able to separate, being able to create box seats for individuals, then I think it's going to catch on like wildfire.
Also remind you all those jobs that the last administration created, which is one of the God-given roles of government, is, you know, making all those metal workers, all the cage makers union members, all these people prosper through the work of their hands and through the work of the Lord in their lives.
So when you see a flatbed truck cruising up the highway, American flags on every post of that truck, and you see a big old wall tied down with compression straps, you'll know that that thing is headed to Cross Vegas. And if you happen to see that thing on its way up the highway, please do take a photo and slap a hashtag Cross Vegas right on there.